This is Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. This hour, what equal parenting really means. Earlier this spring, a newly published study made news. It said that fathers were taking on more child care than they had before, and they were doing more work around the house, like cleaning and laundry and shopping for groceries. One researcher opined that the surge in helpful husbands is bound to continue because it's driven by increases in their wives' paid work. Good news for any working mother who's feeling the stress of balancing a full-time job and a full-time family. But what does it tell us that this was actually news? That fathers were doing more parenting of their children? That men were pitching in to care for the homes they live in? Maybe it tells us what research shows over and over again, that women, even working women, still do the lion's share of the parenting and the housework. And a new survey from the University of Wisconsin backs that up. They found that when both the husband and wife are working full-time, the wife does 28 hours of housework a week, cooking, cleaning, laundry, the husband just 16. And it doesn't matter whether you make a lot of money or a little, the numbers don't change. But they're even more startling when you look at child care. Research shows that on average, women are doing 5 times more child care than men, and they weren't very happy about it. 58% of women in one study said they thought the division of labor wasn't fair to them. We'll tackle that a bit later. We'll ask you, our listeners, where you come down on that. In the meantime, we're going to talk with our guests about why things are still so skewed, especially when so many women are working full time, and what the idea of equal parenting really means. How do you get there from a domestic and a workplace perspective? So our guest for the hour, Francine Deutsch, studies gender and domestic labor issues at Mount Holyoke College. She's the author of Having It All, How Equally Shared Parenting Works, and she's with us this morning from the lovely city of Paris, France. Francine, good to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
May I say I envy you.
Paris is great.
I'll bet. Jessica DeGroote is our other guest this hour. She's founder and director of the nonprofit Third Path Institute, and she's with us this morning from Philadelphia. And Jessica, thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here, Carrie.
For our listeners this hour, as we start our conversation, what would you say the division of labor is in your household? Is it 50-50? Is one partner or the other doing more? Why is that? And if you're in the midst of equal parenting, truly equal parenting, we'd love to hear how it's going. So tell us a little bit about your own household, how you divide up the child care, how you divide up the household chores. Is it 50-50? Is one parent or the other doing more? And if you're trying this true idea of equal parenting, and we'll have a definition here from our guests in just a moment, if you're working on this, if you'd like to get to this, we'd like to hear how it's going. So here's the number, 800-242-2828. If you're listening in the metro area, 651-227-6000. If you're online this morning, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on Send a Question. 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, online at minnesotapublicradio.org. Click on Send a Question again as you tell us about how you divide up the parenting, how you divide up the household work in your home, and what you think this idea of equal parenting really is. Are you working on that now? Our phone lines are already full, so be patient. I want to hear from you. So if you can't get in right away, you can always send us your comments or questions online. But you can also give us a couple of minutes. We'll get to these calls, and then I want to get to yours for sure. Francine, I think we're going to hear from a lot of women who say this is how it should be. And I think we'll hear from men who say this is how it should be. So why isn't it?
Well, there are many things that push people in unequal directions. People simply expect women to be the ones doing the lion's share, and that comes out in a million ways. From the moment a woman gets pregnant, people start asking her, what are you going to do about work? They don't ask their husbands the same question.
That's so true.
Yeah, so there's so many pressures on women and men. Men to optimize their careers, women to be the ideal of a good mother, which means being number one. And I think those things really discourage people from equal sharing. But It's very important to know there are people out there who are doing it. So people do resist those pressures and are able to create equality.
But I have to say, when I saw the numbers from this research, I really would have said more progress on this had been made. I would not have expected that this one study shows that women are doing 28 hours of housework a week, husband is doing 16. The ratio of child care is really lopsided. I thought we'd moved further on the path of this.
Yeah, and I have to say, I haven't looked at that study directly, the one that shows the five times as much child care. But I know other studies have found numbers that aren't consistent with that. So I think there are some studies that have demonstrated that we've come closer. So I don't know the details of that particular study, but I'd be a little skeptical about it.
Jessica, do you think some of this is a holdover from what we saw in our own homes, just these very embedded ideas of how we divide this up?
I think there's truth to that, and there's the opposite of that. The couples we've worked with who are, as Francine pointed out, already sharing care, both sometimes point to their families as the reason why they're sharing care.
Their own parents?
Yeah, their own parents, because, for example, families where, for example, they came more from a working class, working poor background, both parents had to work, but they did it in a way where they really still had time for family and really focused on family. And sometimes the next generation will look back and say, I want to do it the opposite of what happened in my household. So we'll have many men who will contact Third Path and say, how do I do it differently? I want to be more involved in my kids' lives. I don't want to be that absentee father. My job demands so much of me, but I want to do things differently.
And so I know you do contend that more men want to share the parenting. Do more men want to share the housework chores too?
Carrie, you're asking a great question. I have so much success in the couples I talk to that I get confused by this question, and I think it's because we start from a different place. We start from a place where we have the couple work as a team and think about what they want collectively, and they feel very hopeful about it because they see themselves as partners. Heck, they got married. They love each other somewhere, instead of going in and saying where there is a problem. So we're really working with couples who are either starting parenthood or about to move into their kids starting school, or, you know, there's some reason in their lives where they really want to make a change and they're very hopeful. And then what I see is the couples look at it as a collective issue. What do you want to do together around children, around housework? And it's more of an open-ended partnering conversation.
Francine, do you think, though, it is still much the case that often the case, I should say, that women kind of set the tone or the standard for this, as in, this is how the house will be, now you need to contribute to that, and this is how I think the kids ought to be raised, and here's your role in that.
Yeah, I think, though, that happens sometimes, and that is a trap that couples can fall into.
How so?
Because one of the things that women have to be willing to give up in order to share the care of children in the house is to look at it as a collective enterprise, that no one person is going to be in charge of it all. That doesn't mean, though, that if men are arguing for lower standards, that women have to just readily go along with that. It just means that it's something that has to be worked out between the two of them.
Yeah, Jessica, I'm curious about your view on that. Do you think some of this is the woman in the partnership, perhaps, or one partner in the partnership saying, well, this is the standard I want to set, so you have to contribute to it in that way?
You're asking great questions, Carrie, because absolutely. But what's beautiful, again, is that you're getting couples to have these conversations. So think about it. They've got kids home for 18, 20, 22 years, and they're jointly interested in solving this together.
Yeah.
And think about the power and beauty of that. So, yeah, there are some, I mean, Jeff and I have had some arguments about travel and, you know, actually my standard of house care got lower than he could handle. But, you know, we're in it together. We're in it together year after year, month after month, week after week. And I think that's very profound in how much it brings couples together.
So really, though, I think I hear you both saying that there will have to be some real compromise to make this work.
Yes, but one thing we do have to keep in mind and think about how to address is that it's not just what happens inside the couple. It's also expectations from outside.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if the house is messy, it's usually the woman who takes the brunt of the criticism. So it's understandable why she would want the house to be kept to a higher standard. And
right.
the couple has to find strategies for dealing with that kind of outside pressure.
I'd love to hear what those strategies are, because I can tell you that's exactly what happens in our house.
Well, one thing that is extremely important, I think one of the most important things to promote equal sharing, is to find friends who are trying to do the same thing, support each other, and find a social context in which people don't look askance at women who are sharing child care. They admire them.
And, you know, well said, because, again, one reason why Third Path Institute exists and why we have the resources we have available is because actually people looked at Jeff and I and said, wow, you guys are doing something very profound here that's really cool. I'd like to do some of that. But, you know, Jeff and I might have had a messier house, but we actually had time with our kids.
Exactly.
You know, we actually have date night with each other. So we've been very purposeful in creating some really meaningful things in our lives. And I think people overlook the dirt and recognize that there's something else happening in our lives that seems really what they want in their lives, too.
All right. So let's bring in some listeners here. As we're talking about this idea of equal parenting and equal contribution, I should say, to the household chores, research showing us that women are still doing much of the parenting and much of the household work. And we're asking why that is when women are in the workforce full time. Why still juggling so much of this? And I'm curious about your experience. 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. If you've embarked on this idea of equal parenting, tell us a little bit about the experience online at MinnesotaPublicRadio.org and click on Send a Question. And Kelly, in Fargo, North Dakota, you are first up to bat. So question, comment for us.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This is a program that it's long overdue as far as I'm concerned. I have a husband who is, our oldest daughter is 7. And we have two girls. And since the moment we found out I was expecting, he has been absolutely 100% co-equal in terms of his interest in parenting and his commitment set. And he has received so much pushback. You talked moments ago about dealing with the pressures, the external pressures. He absolutely gets, shut out by just about everybody, from his boss to the pediatrician to people at the grocery store. Any time he's with the kids by himself, he's babysitting the kids.
Right.
And it just bothers him so much. He's practically taking up arms saying, I am not babysitting. These are my children.
Isn't that funny that that's the language when the father's with their own kids? It's babysitting.
Kelly, I love hearing your story. This is Jessica. And I want to let you know that you and your husband are so not alone. And what Third Path has done is really tried to create a whole community of shared care families that can meet each other and learn from each other. So we've really heard this over and over again. And I'd love to lend some support to you because you're doing great things.
Francine, what about this? Is it that some of these people in Kelly's husband's circle feel threatened by this? Or what is it?
Oh,
why
certainly.
So much pushback?
I'm sure they certainly do. I mean, what they're doing is really groundbreaking. It's really something new and different. And I think in their heart of hearts, many people really would like to be able to do this, but many aren't doing it, and then that can be threatening.
Why do you say it's so groundbreaking?
Well, it's just there's never been a society, I shouldn't say that, but it's just for so many years, women have been the primary caretakers, the primary housekeepers, and although things have changed dramatically in the workplace with women, you know, just coming into the workplace in greater and greater numbers, men's contributions at home have really lagged behind. And so I think some men have resisted. So it isn't that they all want to do it. And when they see a man who's really doing his share, which they must know in their heart of hearts is right, is fair, I think sometimes they want to push back on that. And good for him and good for her that they push right back and keep going.
Let me take a call here from Paul in Golden Valley. Hi, Paul. You're on Mid Morning.
Hi there. Yeah, I was just going to comment that I haven't seen the study that you're describing. But I'd be interested to know what categories of housework they have, because it seems to me Frequently, men, not always, but frequently men end up doing a lot of tasks around the house, like lawn mowing and driveway, you know, sidewalk shoveling, etc.
Right.
Cleaning up after pets, fixing cars, changing oil, doing general maintenance tasks, painting, even overtime at work that doesn't usually get included in those studies. And
Paul,
so I just wonder how that figures out.
I wonder something about you, Paul, though, real quick. So how would you say you divide the household tasks?
Well, the list I just gave you are the things that I kind of typically am, you know, in charge of taking care of.
How about inside the house?
It's a bad example because right now my wife is a attorney and she has a really demanding job, so I end up doing, you know, quite a bit more inside the house as well.
Okay.
But generally, I don't think those kind of tasks are ever included in the list.
Yeah,
actually, they are. Most of the studies that look at people's time use do include what we normally consider the stereotypical male task. Now, I certainly count that as part of house care and what goes into running a house and a family. The reality is, however, when you count up the hours that those tasks take, they simply don't take as much time overall, if you look over the course of a month, as washing the dishes, changing the diapers, making the dinner, cleaning up after dinner. Those tasks tend to take, by and large, more time, and they often can't be put off. So some of the tasks you're talking about, one can decide when one's going to do them, but one can't decide when to make dinner. That's a task that has to be done every single day. But it's certainly not the case that we don't count them. It's just if you really want to have equal sharing, it's not enough for men to simply do those stereotypical male tasks and for women to do the stereotypical female tasks.
Go ahead, Jessica.
Paul's raised a great point here. He used some words that I think are very important, overtime at work. And then Kelly talked about pushback from a boss. And I think we have to remember that there's something else that's going on that couples are negotiating around that we have to pay attention to, which is, you know, how are we going to pay the bills, too? And I am, you know, I'm a 50-50 parent person, right? So this is speaking from a 50-50 parent household. But what I had to do was take on 50% of the responsibility of making sure that we had the income we needed as a household, too. And I think when we look at this equation, we have to be careful about how and be sympathetic about how families are trying to figure things out. They're doing the best they can. Part of the equation is all that work of laundry, et cetera, the task that can't be put off? And one other task that can't be put off is making sure there's enough income coming in.
But Jessica,
right.
I want to make sure we're not saying here that because somebody's job pays more, you know, you're spending the same amount of time at the job, but because somebody's job pays more means that they don't have to pick up the slack at home or with the parenting.
No, in fact, in our household and in many shared care households, that's not part of the equation. But it's what we have seen is once in a while where couples will get stuck is that there is an unspoken decision that there's going to be pushing the man out the door to earn the income and not recognizing that is being done. So maybe the mom is doing some gatekeeping around household stuff and actually taking on more household stuff and also pushing dad out the door to do some income generating stuff. And what we're trying to do is get couples to talk about that collectively. How do we want to make sure we get the income we need? How do we want to make sure we take care of the laundry, the cooking, et cetera, the kids?
Francine, I was surprised. I saw some numbers recently. I can't remember specifically what they are, but how many households now where the woman is making more, substantially more in some cases than the man?
Yeah, I think it's about 25%
now. Okay.
It's very surprising.
Yes.
yes, it's true. However, it's still 75% that men are making more. And I agree with Jessica, although I think it's not always the woman pushing the man out the door. It's also men have grown up feeling that it was their responsibility to make the money. And I've talked to couples in which the women were actually making more money per hour, and the men were trying to work so many hours so that they could be bringing more money into the family, when it actually, in a rational way, would have made more sense for the men to spend less time in the workplace and more time taking care of children.
So we're getting at really deep issues about what
right.
is what's a good woman, what's a good man.
Exactly.
And I think that's one of the most profound impacts of shared care over time is that you have men and women really having conversations over time about what do they like to do as opposed to what roles do they feel like they were boxed into.
Okay. Let me go to the phones here to Christina in Minnetonka. Hi, Christina. Thanks for waiting. Tell us about your own experience.
Well, I feel very, very lucky to have a full partner in my husband who is the primary breadwinner. Financially, he brings home about twice what I make. But when I went back to work after having been home with our children for the first 5 years, he really picked up the slack. And he that was there when I was, and we've actually have more of a 50-50 parenting relationship than we did when I was home full time. And my girlfriends actually have asked me to stop talking about all of the things that my husband does.
Why?
Because he's blowing the curve. He's making them frustrated because he gets two small children up, dressed, fed, makes lunches, and gets them to school, and then gets himself to work. Meanwhile, I'm up, showered, and gone. And I get home, and I get them in the afternoon. I pick them up. I get them from school in that cranky hour, get them fed. He gets home, and then we split bath and story time and put them to bed.
And it sounds like
we've done
a great partnership.
You know, it's fantastic, but it's funny to me because the girl, you know, it's Friday night on a girls' night, and I mentioned something, and more than one occasion, my girlfriends have said, and some of them I've been friends with 25 years, you know what? Could you just stop talking about it because you're making me angry at my own husband? And I wanted to say that we should be raising the bar. We shouldn't be not talking about how well that these real partnerships are doing. But, you know, I want to say to them, hey, you know, you can renegotiate your contract.
That's right.
A
good way to put it. Go ahead.
That's a really important point in your story, that things change over time. And even if you haven't had a 50-50 partnership at one point in time, you can renegotiate things. And I think there are many moments in a lifetime when things are up for rediscussion. And I think when a woman reenters the workforce, that's a key moment when couples should be sitting down and saying, well, that's really a radical change, and how are we going to change what's going on at home?
Jessica, I know you work with couples who do that. So how do you open the contract for renegotiation?
Well, it's funny listening to Christina's story. I mean, one of the most frequently emailed response we got after the New York Times article was from young couples planning children, which I think is just lovely. Think about that. We have a whole new generation of couples who do not yet have kids wanting to really set this up. And what we have is resources available to them. We have a workbook which we can provide, and they can kind of figure things out on their own about how to set this up. Or we actually have a cadre of couples counselors and career counselors who can work with them to think about how to set this up. So we actually have a lot of resources for couples to either work on their own or in partnership with somebody to really define the future they want that they will keep on creating over time.
But give me a sense of how that conversation begins.
Well, it depends on if it's a renegotiation or just planning the future. We do a three-part coaching process where we work with a couple, and number one actually, Carrie, is to learn about the work that they do, because different jobs have different flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
So we really start by thinking about what kind of work do they do, how long have they worked at their workplace, how much success will they have, because sometimes the problem is that work is demanding so much of both partners, they just don't have energy at the end of the day to have time for kids and home the way they wanted it. So we start there, and then we actually work with a couple to start thinking about, well, what would the ideal work-family balance solution look like, assuming they're on the same page? And we can actually start mapping out some changes. It might be they have a school-age child, and they want to be able to be home after school a couple days a week. Well, how would we help them make that happen? It might be that they are about to have a baby, and they both want to work 4 days a week, and then only use 3 days of child care, and we work with them to think about how to make that happen.
All right, let me go to the phones here, 800-242-2828, as we talk this morning about equal parenting and the idea of shared work around the home. 651-227-6000 online this morning at minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on Send a Question. We still have full phone lines. If you can't get in by phone right now, I hope you'll be patient, and because we want to hear from you, and you can also reach us online to Ryan in Rochester. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
What do you want to tell us about this?
Well, I just wanted to put in a couple of plugs, but I've been an at-home parent for 6 years now, and I will probably be for another 3 when all is said and done. And the one fantastic group in the cities and also in Rochester is the Minnesota Dads at Home group. But going back to one of your previous callers talking about how to get their partners involved more in the family, I was the sole male member of an early childhood class through a school district.
How was that?
Well, it was fun. I spent most of the time in the corner, actually. but that last class, pardon me, I have a couple kids in the background here.
Okay.
During that last class, it was the time to pick the man's brain and try to figure out how they can get their partners to become better partners in the household, and it was just an amusing situation to be in.
So what was your answer to that? What'd you tell them?
Well, I didn't want to, you know, completely rat out their husband, but I basically said, you know, anybody can do anything that they want to if they put their minds to it, and this is no exception. You can break away from those stereotypes. It's not as big a deal as most people seem to want to make it out to be.
Good to have your call, Ryan. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.
We're going to continue our conversation here after news. Jessica DeGroote is with us. She's a founder and director of the nonprofit Third Path Institute, and she's joining us from Philly. And Francine Deutsch is with us. She studies gender and domestic labor issues at Mount Holyoke College. She's the author of Having It All, How Equally Shared Parenting Works. She must have it all because she's from Paris, France, this morning with us. We're going to take a break for news, and when we come back, continue our discussion. You can join in, 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. To the newsroom, and Perry Finelli. Good morning, Perry.
Carrie, factory orders in May turned in the weakest performance in 3 months, reflecting slumping demand for autos, heavy machinery, and steel. The Commerce Department says the 0.6% increase was less than half the gains turned in during April and March. Oil prices are flat at just under $141 a barrel. Ahead of weekly U.S. inventory reports, prices held steady after Iran's oil minister said the country would not cut oil deliveries even if it were attacked by Israel or the U.S. President Bush is seeking to tamp down speculation Israel will launch a military strike against Iran before he leaves office. He said today all options are on the table, but said military action would not be his first choice. President Bush also says it has been a tough month in Afghanistan with rising U.S. casualties. He says one reason for the rising deaths is that our troops are taking the fight to a tough enemy. Bush says it's also been a tough month for the Taliban. He said he is assessing whether to send more U.S. troops there. With the worst of the Mississippi River flooding apparently over, the Army Corps of Engineers is preparing to reopen 3 navigation locks. The flood forced the closure of locks in Clarksville and Winfield, Missouri, and one near Chester, Illinois. The winner of the FBI Director's Community Leadership Award is Suzanne Keplinger, Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. The Minneapolis Field Office gives the award every year to someone in its region, which includes Minnesota, North, and South Dakota. FBI officials say Keplinger has become a respected voice in the area of human trafficking, especially of American Indian women. Partly to mostly sunny skies. The forecast for the state today, high temperatures, mid-60s to low 80s. Right now in the Twin Cities, the temperature is 75 and the skies are sunny. It's 10:35. This is Minnesota Public Radio News.
Hi, Gary Eichten here, inviting you to join us for midday on Independence Day. We'll hear a soldier's audio letters from the Vietnam War.
You know, you get nervous, you know, after being shot at a lot. And then some dog would run out from a village, or either that or a rabbit, or even a little twig would fall and make a little noise, you know. Everyone would just open up with machine guns and then, wow.
The Vietnam Letters, July 4th at noon on Minnesota Public Radio News.
Today's programming is supported by the Minnesota State Lottery. From International Falls to Albert Lea, the lottery has contributed more than $500 million to fund environmental projects across Minnesota. More about the lottery helping nature at mnlottery.com.
We're back on Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. You heard Gary Eichten talking about the Vietnam letters on the 4th of July. Here's what we're doing on Mid-Morning, rebroadcasting a conversation about the Declaration of Independence. One of the rare original copies of the Declaration was on display here in Minnesota. It's coming back for the Republican National Convention at the end of August, beginning of September. So we're going to rebroadcast this discussion with two esteemed historians who talk about how the arguments at the center of the Declaration still hold true today. That's at 9. And since we knew a lot of families would be together, since we're talking about families this morning, we're rebroadcasting my Talking Volumes conversation with Judy Blume. Oh, we had such a great discussion with her at the Fitzgerald Theater, an audience full of kids and moms and dads and grandparents, and we included some of the questions that the kids had for Judy Blume. So if you missed that, if you weren't in the audience, you missed the broadcast of it, we thought we'd give you a chance to listen again. She's absolutely charming. That'll be at 10 o'clock on the 4th of July, so I hope you'll make a note to listen into that. And back to our discussion this hour, Jessica DeGroote is with us. Francine Deutsch is with us. We're talking about this idea of equal parenting and equal shared chores around the household. And I'm going to go right back to the phones because we have so many people waiting here, to Tori in Minneapolis. And Tori, thanks for being patient. What do you want to tell us about this?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just kind of disagree with this whole notion of equal parenting. I think it's a direct correlation to kind of what our society has become now, where consumerism reigns, materialism reigns, what activities our kids are in reigns, what they're doing is the most important, with music lessons and sports, and we have these overscheduled lives, and women are starting to feel angry and resentful about having to do the majority of the work. And I think that when it comes down to it, just the basic fact that we carry the child and then oftentimes breastfeed the child for a year or longer, it's just kind of an innate, natural thing that the woman is going to do more work than the man does in the home. I mean, even back to the day of cavemen, women were there cooking, you know, keeping the place that the family lived at clean. So I think it's kind of unrealistic to expect those gender roles to change too much. And I think the more important question is, why are we so upset about this now? I mean, what does that say about our society today?
I appreciate the call. Francine, tell me what you think of this.
Well, first of all, I don't really accept the premise. I accepted that breastfeeding does create a bias in favor of mothers. Breastfeeding lasts maybe at most a year in the United States. And so there's a long period of time, 17 other years, in which there's no particular reason why women are more suited to taking care of children than men. And even during the early phases of parenting, in the equally sharing families that I interviewed, men were highly involved. Yes, women breastfed, but men diapered babies. They got up and walked around with babies at night. I think we think this is natural because this is what we see. But once we look around more carefully, we see that there are other ways of doing things. Now, I totally agree with the notion that our society has become too materialistic. But in fact, the Third Path Institute, which Jessica can talk about, part of the idea of it is that we don't need to work 50 hours a week, two people working 50 hours a week, so that we can have more and more and more. Maybe it's better to cut back a little bit, have a little less, but have much more time with your children.
Jessica, what would you say about what Tori's point was?
Well, thank you for that important point about that. Really, I think shared care couples are actually looking at that exact issue of what's the right amount of income, what do we really need? Tori, I would say, you know, the goal is to really have a diversity of families out there, and the point being, if you and your partner are really happy with the choice that you're making, then that's great. But what I'm hearing is that, one, women are frustrated. So we're trying to help make some change there. And I also am hearing, because of the work we do, men are frustrated. So for those couples who are unhappy with a traditional setup, there's so many more alternatives out there.
Tori, another point in response to what you've heard now?
No, I agree with what they're saying. But I think that the article that came out in this week's New York Times about childless Europe, I don't know if you all have read that yet,
yes,
but I think that's a very interesting point to consider in this conversation, because I think, I mean, there are many factors playing into that, but I think a lot of women in this day and age, with the way society is and not having enough time in the day, are saying, I want to live my life. There are things I want to do. And, you know, being the primary caretaker in most cases of children is not important to me anymore. There's just too much to do and not enough time to do it.
Good to have your call.
Thank you.
Francine, I have not read that article in the Times about European care. What are they telling us about it?
Well, I haven't read it in detail, but I think the basic, there's a demographic shift in Europe such that the birth rate is very low.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of countries are trying to figure out ways of dealing with it. And one way they're trying to deal with it is by giving more parental leave, having good child care options. So, in fact, I think Europe is really grappling with this issue by trying to create public policy that benefits families. For all our talk in the United States about the importance of families, the United States is very behind most European countries on family-friendly policies. So if we really value the family, we should have paid child care. We should have high-quality paid child care. These are things that would help all parents, regardless of whether they're trying to equally share or not.
We have an online comment here from Martin in Minneapolis. He says, more sex, please, if you want me to clean the dishes and raise the kids. Jessica, is that about that negotiation that that should
yay,
go on?
Yay, Martin. I really think there is a great, I have been trying to figure out how to talk about that issue, because think about it. If you get couples who really feel like they're on the same page,
yes,
they're pushing back at their jobs, so they're not coming home exhausted. They actually have time to hang out with their kids and do some of those fun things that, you know, aren't overscheduled, just playing and having fun together. It's really, you know, pretty good. You can really get women pretty excited when you see men doing this stuff. So, you know, I think there's some real payoff here, Martin.
No, I so you're saying there's something erotic
There's nothing sexier than a man who's done some of the housework.
Jeez, I agree with that.
I don't know why
men
never
get that.
Studied this in depth.
Francine, why don't men get that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I certainly think so. And I have to say, there was one father I interviewed who said, you know, when I wash the dishes, when I take care of the kids, mom's a lot happier when we go to bed at night.
To Sarah in St. Louis Park. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi. My comment was just this. I'm a working mom. We have three kids. My husband and I are both attorneys. And we probably have the messiest house on the block, and our kids are not overscheduled. And it seems to me the people who really pull this off are the ones with two working parents and a lot of kids and activities are the parents who have a lot of grandparent involvement.
Oh.
Could you comment on how that factored into your study? Because I'm so jealous of my girlfriends who have two grandmas in town to help out with those little, you know, extra parent running when you have activities scheduled at the same time or a little babysitting time.
Well, one of the things I discovered, I've done a study of students around the world and what they expected once they had children. And one of the things I found that was very interesting is in China, the students really expected the parents, the grandparents, that is, to take a significant chunk of the child care role, and then they would divide up the rest of it equally with their husbands. That was their idea. I think grandparent care is a wonderful thing. I think, though, it can sometimes discourage fathers. That happens in some families as well.
How so?
Well, I think sometimes, for example, once the baby is born, the grandmother comes to help the mother. And sometimes the father can be pushed a little outside. It really depends on what the grandparent's attitude is towards the father being an involved father.
Oh, right.
And just to show, I think that definitely happens, Francine, but I want to talk about some examples where grandparents have played an incredible role. In fact, even in my own family, we've used them less for everyday care, but they've taken our kids every Friday night for date night. So,
that's great.
I mean, I think there really is something about thinking about a community of support, and I've heard some creative families who've basically adopted, you know, maybe somebody in their community who's really, somebody in their 60s or 70s who's somebody they could connect to and have almost like a surrogate grandparent.
Yeah,
and
that's
build
wonderful.
So there's all kinds of relationships. And I think, Sarah, you're absolutely right. Building in a community of support is part of shared care success.
online here from Tony in Bloomington says, I've been a stay-at-home parent for 10 years. My wife still does a lot of the housework, childcare, because she seems to have a greater desire to do it. You think she really has a greater desire to do it, or do you think she feels like she has to? Jessica?
Again, I think we have to look at that couple and ask them those questions. But my hunch is something I've seen over and over again is that gatekeeper role that mm-hmm. sometimes women play. It comes from feeling bad. They're, again, the ideal mother is someone who is supposed to be home with your kids, has a perfect house. And so sometimes moms come home from a full day at work and feel bad that they haven't been playing that role. And to feel better, they actually push out the father in, and so they can say, well, now I've come home and I've made the dinner and I've done the laundry and I've, you know, made the cookies for tomorrow's class trip, because they feel like that's making them feel like they've succeeded in that ideal mother role.
I want you both to tell me a bit about how, when you're in a demanding workplace, you have a conversation about maybe a desire to equal parent with your boss. I mean, what do you say?
Thank you for raising that, Carrie. That's a core piece of what Third Path Institute does, and we actually have a book about how you can redesign any job. And we've worked from people from all ends of the spectrum, from secretaries to leaders, around how they can redesign their job. And this goes back to 10 years of work that was published in HBR a long time ago, showing that when we really support people to think about how to do their job well, but also have time for whatever else it is that they want in their lives, they often can find win-win answers and sometimes even improve how work is done. So we have lots of resources for people to think about, for whatever reason, kids, elder care, community involvement, how they can redesign their jobs to have time for those things.
Francine, do you think a lot of workplaces are still behind the curve on this? The answer's got to be yes, doesn't it?
Yes, certainly. I think a lot of workplaces are definitely behind the curve. But I agree with Jessica that negotiation can work, even in those workplaces that haven't really designed family-friendly policies. Sometimes it's not the written policy that matters, but what can be worked out with a particular supervisor. And sometimes it helps if there's a group of people in the workplace who want things to change. For example, at Mount Holyoke College, where I work, when I was an untenured faculty member, there were a group of people having young children, and in our department, we all agreed that it wasn't a good idea to have department meetings from 4 to 6
uh-huh.
in the afternoon, because that was when people needed to go and pick up their kids from childcare. And because there were a group of us, we were able to convince the entire department to change its normal schedule.
Huh.
We started meeting in the morning. So that's an example of how even in workplaces that haven't been sensitive to the family, it is possible to make things change.
Let me take Jessica.
Francine, you made a great point. It's more about the persons at this stage than the organization.
And meaning what?
If you're in a big organization and you happen to work for someone who seems to be from the old school approach to work, look inside that organization for places where there is more flexibility happening, because there's going to be some supervisor there who gets it, who understands
right.
it's not a win-lose choice. And then you can move either internally inside of an organization or to a different organization, because there are a lot of supervisors who do get it.
To Sarah in Brainerd. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Tell us about your question or your own experience with this.
Okay, well, my situation, my husband and I, you know, do equal, you know, in our household. It's very much that way. And I just was wondering if your guest could comment on something I seem to have run into, and that's where, because we both make the decisions and we both care for the children, I run into it from even family members where it seems like I'm labeled as controlling, or we know who wears the pants in the family, you know. And I just wonder if you run into a lot of that, and just if you could comment.
They're chuckling knowingly, Sarah.
Yes,
I think they get it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's both the kind of criticism that women get when they're equal shares, and it's also, there's something I've written about called the double standard of praise and criticism. So men who do things that women routinely do get a tremendous amount of praise for it often. Oh, isn't that so great?
That's so true.
You're diapering the baby. Whereas women do the same thing, and it's not really noticeable. So yes, I think what you're tapping into are the lagging social norms that people are not yet used to equality. But the good news is that you are helping them change. Even as they are questioning you, they're seeing a different way that things can be. And I think that's what has to happen. You're just a revolutionary.
Jessica, weigh in here.
Yes, absolutely. We actually call Share Care parents, or the leaders we've been working with who've been redesigning their workplaces, pioneers. Because think about it. You know, when we went out west, we were going out there without knowledge if we'd have the right amount of food or water or safety. But we went out west anyways. And I think that, Sarah, you've been a real pioneer, and that, you know, basically parents are doing this, workplaces are slowly changing, and they are really being pioneers in this effort.
We have an online comment here from Elizabeth in Cannon Falls who says, I think much has to do with how you were raised. We brought this up, I think, at the beginning of the show. My son does much better with sharing chores than my husband. We were raised in the 1950s. And I want to ask you both this, whether this in some ways becomes an obsolete conversation. What do you think, Francine? In the next 10 years, because of the way these kids, some of these kids are being raised and what we've heard this morning, that's what they'll know, that equal is normal.
Yeah, well, certainly that's going to help. And there is some evidence that if you look at different cohorts of people, that younger men and women do have equality, at least as a model in their mind. But I guess I would say that, I mean, I was raised in the 1950s, and at that time it never occurred to me that I would have a full-time career. And so we are not stuck because of how we were raised. Mm-hmm. And how we were raised, it influences us, but it doesn't determine what we do. And so, yes, I think it's great that these sons are being given chores and that it'll seem much more normal to them to share things equally than maybe it does for my generation. Nonetheless, I think even people who were raised in traditional households can and are changing.
Jessica, I just want to interject this. One of the things I think is odd is that as we see couples wait to get married later and later, you know, young women are older, men are older now before they decide to get married. You know, these are people who are often keeping their own households, especially the men.
Right.
And yet go into a marriage and things seem to often revert right back to what it was like in the household they were growing up in. I find that odd.
Yeah, this is a really sad fact. When single men and women, when they get married, women do more, even before they have children, women spend more time doing housework after they get married than they did before they got married. Men spend less time doing housework.
What's the deal? Again, just reverting back to roles?
I guess it's those roles coming into people's heads, that's what they're supposed to do now that they're in a married couple.
And then I think what happens is that once a child's born, there really becomes the challenge of trying to figure out, somebody wants to take care of that kid. Are we going to do it ourselves? Are we going to have some child care? And so the roles that might have played out unconsciously get kind of solidified because people are really trying to negotiate how to balance work and family and a child.
That's right.
But you asked a good question, Carrie, about will this become obsolete?
Yeah, go ahead.
Time?
Yeah.
I think one sad note is what we've seen is the impact of the workplace. Now, we are having success working with small organizations to help them really set up different policies. That's one other leg of our work at Third Path. We work with small organizations to help them really change. But in large organizations, if the norms continue to be as they are, unfortunately what happens is couples, you know, are moving along. They have the kid. They're working. And these organizations have these norms about who's going to get move ahead in their careers, who's going to be held back.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, there might be some family choices happening in context of these larger organizations that can kind of, even though their goal is to do some sort of alternative approach to work and family, the organizational norms kind of push them into more traditional roles again. Now, we're working on that. That's what, you know, why we're a nonprofit, why we're going to change the world one step at a time.
Jessica, as you've talked about reaching out to companies, I keep thinking about a conversation that we had, a month or so ago, about a book called Work Sucks. It was by two people who worked inside the Best Buy Corporation based here in the Twin Cities, who are really in beginning, I think, what they hope is a countrywide change on results-only work environments, which
That's
is,
great.
Yeah, stop thinking of it's the place you have to show your face for 8 hours. I mean, they're really upending the idea of how we work, or they're trying to, worked inside Best Buy. Now they're out trying to spread the word about it. But I keep thinking about that because as you, Jessica, talk about what's happening inside workplaces, I think this matches that. I mean, this would be a key element of that if it wasn't, we weren't so bound by the idea of what work is.
And thanks for raising that one. I sure hope every single Third Path employee doesn't think work sucks, because what we've done is created a workplace where it's not an either-or choice. You know, I have employees who are single parents. I have employees who don't have kids, and each one of them has been able to design their job in a way where they're getting their work done well, excellently, and they also have a life. So I think work can be wonderful if we can create those workplaces where people really are supported to live whole lives. And it's not, again, it's not a win-lose. Workplaces win in this. We've achieved what we've achieved as a nonprofit because we've approached work this way.
Francine, give me the last word on that.
Well, I think work and family are both important. What we're all trying to get here is balance in life. I think mothers and fathers are both really important to their children. Equally shared parenting works because it's good for everybody. It's good for women, it's good for men, and it's good for children.
Good to have you both here. Thanks so much for a lively conversation. I knew it would be, but it's been really good to have you. Thank you.
Well, you're
you.
A great
Our
host.
Pleasure.
It was great.
Francine Deutsch with us. She studies gender and domestic labor issues at Mount Holyoke College. She's the author of Having It All, How Equally Shared Parenting Works, and she was with us this morning from Paris. And Jessica DeGroot, founder and director of the nonprofit Third Path Institute, and she was with us this morning from Philly. By the way, I mentioned that Work Sucks show that we did. That we had a lot of input from our listeners on that one, too. That was on June 2nd at 9 a.m. If you'd like to listen back to it, there's also a book that I read for the show, and we talked about the book as well, if you want more information on that. Coming up tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, Democratic Senate nominee Al Franken in the studio with us to talk about some of the issues that he's talking about with voters, and should be a lively conversation. I know he'll have questions for Al Franken, and I certainly have plenty of questions for him, too. So he is with us tomorrow morning for the hour. And then at 10, this is an amazing story. Jill Bolte Taylor has written a book called My Stroke of Insight. She was a neuroanatomist, had studied the brain for years when she had a stroke in her late 30s. And she describes in the book what she knew about what was happening to her brain, even in the midst of having the stroke, and then the long road to recovery, and how she emerged from this experience, well, with new insight. Should be a great conversation. The book is just fascinating. Again, it's called My Stroke of Insight, and Jill Bolte Taylor is going to be with us tomorrow to talk about it and to talk about her experience. I hope you're with us for that. And I want to mention this special webpage. I've gotten some email from our listeners, actually gotten some snail mail, too, about this. As you know, we're having this ongoing series of conversations about the arguments that define the national character. We launched it with a conversation with Howard Fineman. He wrote a book about this. And then we had a conversation called Who is an American? And we've set up a special webpage as we go through this, through Election Day. We've got this webpage that we're asking you to upload your ideas, essays, video, audio onto it. You can find it through a link on the Mid-Morning page, and I hope you'll check it out. This is Mid-Morning.